Welcome to another episode of Managing Change on Internet Blog Talk Radio, your host, Ronald Allen. This is home for truly engaging conversation. Managing Change brings you an eclectic perspective on issues that affect you, the individual, the family nucleus, careers, business, and that entrepreneurial spirit that is uniquely American. And yes, a word or two about life's perspectives on managing change for that human touch that drives us to unique heights of accomplishment. Carve out the time every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. for Managing Change on internetblogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen. Now, also here at www.managingchange2.com. Internet radio at its best.
Good evening and welcome once again. This is Ronald Allen and you are listening to Managing Change on Blog Talk Radio. Well, tonight's guest is going to certainly pitch us into the right mood of 2016. Because we're going to be talking about the technology of things, racing with technology. As usual, we want to give you a few updates on what's going on in our community, in the business area. My good friends at Burlington County Library, Joan DeVore, heard speak of her. She is an incredible resource for the small business owner who doesn't have a plethora of technical support, research capability, and just access to great data, market data. She is having a Lean Venture Series launch party story slam. This is going to be March 4th. And this will be at the library. Of course, all you have to do is plug into your website, bcls.lib.nj.com. Just add the word Lean Venture Series. Lean Venture Series. And you'll see page come up. I strongly suggest it. I've attended many of her workshops. As you know, I've worked with her extensively on my research for the Arkansas. You get certainly more value than most events. Talking about most events, we are very, very pleased to finally bring on Rising Tide Capital. You know that this is a nonprofit down in Jersey City. They have incredible reach in helping small, mid, middle market companies with technical assistance, business formatting, legal, accounting, processing, and certainly certification. We are going to have a series of interviews with graduating business owners. This is a unique opportunity for the business community to really find answers and solutions to their business challenge. Well, tonight's program, as we mentioned, we have a great gentleman who is fairly unique, Jim Lee. He is the founder of Strategic Foresight Investments. And our program today is entitled Racing with Technology, Technology of Things. Jim is a certified financial planner, chartered financial analyst, and a chartered market technician. What is interesting and unique about Jim is that he's based out of Delaware, investment advisory. He's led investment committee and managed more than $700 million at Lowe Associates. You may now know of it as Bryn Mawr Trust. Certainly no small feat. He holds a BA degree in economics from the College of William and Mary and an MS in studies of the future, University of Houston, Clear Lake. I think now it's quite apparent why we have him on our program. In his free time, Jim enjoys mountain biking, cooking, and, as all well-rounded men must have, a significant other, his wife, Stephanie. Good evening, Jim. How are you today?
Doing wonderfully. Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Absolutely, Jim. And I am very thrilled because your perspective as an investor is focusing on the very application of things, technology, that not only will, but have already impacted how we go about our daily life, how we manage, monitor our health, and how we can help in many diverse areas of society. So let's start off with, you're an investor, obviously dealing with finance. What is your take? I'm going to steal a little privy information from you, if we may. What is your take on the economy for this year in terms of a small business owner in light of our economy?
Sure, sure. You know, the best way that I would describe this, Ronald, would be to kind of call it a zombie economy, so to speak. You know, it's not really alive. It's not really dead. It's just kind of shambling along mindlessly, as it were. So we have been in a slow motion recovery, so to speak, really since, you know, 2009, thereabouts. So it's been about 6 years worth of this 1-2% economic growth. And it's been a bit of a grind. And based on the research that I've done, both in terms of cycles and demographics, it could run a little bit longer. You know, I'm thinking maybe 3 to 5 years. But things should pick up right around 2018, 2020, and we should, you know, get back to some real growth again at some point.
And I appreciate you giving me that question. You know, most of our programs are very organic. And even though people like to listen to the news and they hear, well, employment is going up, yes, there are some sectors that are certainly burgeoning. Technology is always seen as an opportunity. The reality is, you have certainly supported this, the research that I've found from the third-party institutions have said that it is going to be sluggish, that it is not in a recovery. So let's kind of dig into the opportunities that you certainly presented when I met you down. And you spoke of the Internet of Things. Let's start off with, what is your definition of Internet?
Sure. Well, you know, if you take a look at the last 15 years or so, we've gotten 5 billion people on the Internet, either through their cell phones or their desktops or laptops or televisions. And what they're talking about is that over the course of the next decade, we may get 50 billion objects on the Internet. So, for example, if you look at the automotive industry, a lot of what makes this year's cars different from the cars 2 or 3 years ago is really the Internet connectivity that they have. You know, we're really heading into a world with everything connected on the Internet that nothing will remain lost, stolen, or broken for very long, which I find a very, very interesting proposition. So, at this point, we're trying to figure out how to connect more and more objects to the Internet, and that could include your car. It could even include your bicycle, for example. So there's now an application where you can put a chip into the seat of your bicycle, and if someone takes it, you can actually track your stolen bike on your cell phone, for example, which in some cases may be better than locking it up. I mean, if you look at car thefts, for example, with LoJack and Trunk Monkey and some other technologies, car thefts have dropped by about 40% over the last 5 years. And I find that really quite interesting.
I'm glad you mentioned its application so that we get a really broad perspective of this new technology. A lot of people talk about, well, this is great new technology and you'll be able to do all these wonderful things. I think certainly the business owners who may be in the area of creating, others in using the technology, can appreciate this. So let's see how we can continue to talk about the technology itself, the application in its space, business opportunities, and for those few investors that are listening, where they might find, or rather, Jim, your view on the investment opportunity so that we give a kind of a well-rounded approach to this. And I just want to start off with the one which I like, wearable tech goes invisible. Describe what that
right.
is.
Sure, sure. So I've been following wearable technology for a few years now, and it really came out of this idea of the quantified self, or out of professional athletics. And that is people measuring every heartbeat, every calorie, every step as a way of managing their weight or really optimizing their personal performance. So one of my earlier hits in this space was a company called Garmin, for example, which was one of the first companies to come out with GPS navigation systems for cars, right? Which was a fantastic play right until it came out as a free app on iPhone, at which point it just kind of leveled the company. But then they came back again with some of these sports watches and watches for bikers and so forth, and we had a fairly significant IPO last year for Fitbit. Now, this is something that I use to track my own activity and to sort of keep myself on my best behavior, so to speak. But if you look at some of the watches used now, the wearable devices, the wearable internet devices, they kind of remind me of the Casio calculator watches, from the 1980s. Well, they look kind of plasticky, black, kind of clunky and just really kind of nerdy too. But they do their job. This year, what you're seeing in the next generation of wearables is they just look like everyday objects that do magical things. So, for example, Samsung now has a wearable watch. It's called the Gear 2, which enables you to check the weather, monitor your heartbeat, even make touchless payments. So instead of pulling out your credit card, you'd really just wave your hand over the place where you typically put your credit card and complete your transaction through Samsung Payments. And it works pretty well.
That's interesting because a Citibank recently rolled out on ATM cash accessing system that you use with your phone. Bank of America, I believe, is doing it just with businesses. One question I do have to ask. When I did more sports than I do today, I don't run around too much, was perspiration. Does the technology take into consideration, does the design and the technology take that into consideration? I know they typically would, but what's the longevity of these products? If someone, who's in their 20s, 30s, early 40s, and they really work out, is it that it's
I think it kind of depends on specifically the band that you're using. I'm about ready to put my Fitbit Surge to rest after about a year. But if you have something with a metallic band or something more durable, you can just change the band. Or, in all likelihood, you'll probably want to get a new device just because the ones that are coming out right now are just simply so much better.
And affordability.
The affordability is phenomenal. I mean, you can get more basic models in the $50 to $100 range. So there's definitely some cheaper pricing coming down the road, and you're going to find these in more and more different shapes and forms too.
You know, talking about wearable art technology, Google Glass, when it first came out, didn't really take off to the extent on the consumer end. I understand, and this is from another company that we were speaking with, the industrial usage in the plant. Very,
Yeah, with Google Glass, you have a product that came out just a little bit too early. And I think people are very sensitized to what's on their face and what's on their head, right? So I've had numerous conversations with people with Google Glass, and it's always been very interesting, but for the most part, it seemed to get between people in terms of their interaction, so to speak. And there are quite a few applications for industrial purposes, for learning how to fix engines or maintenance work or even surgical types of work. And I think Google Glass was really just the very first iteration of that, simply because the display didn't have enough resolution to do anything really technical. Now, there are a few things that are kind of coming out of that. One time is real-time speech translation, for example. So someone might be able to speak with you, and it could be in Mandarin Chinese, or it could be in Arabic, or whatever. And what you would hear would be in English. And if they're wearing a similar device, they might be able to comprehend your speech in their own language as well. So that's one application that's getting a lot of hype right now. Now, going on down the road, something that I'm getting really kind of excited about is something called the Holovisor by Microsoft. And basically, what this is it's a form of glasses that you can see through, but with a digital overlay. So they have a transparent screen on top of the visor, and then on that transparent screen, they will project information that you will find useful, okay? So this is kind of a big deal, as it were, because with a HoloLens, you can see an augmented reality that may change or may be adapted to your situation or to your needs. So if you're going down the street in a strange city, you might pull up TripAdvisor to see the ratings and reviews of the restaurants as you're going down the street. You go into a pub, maybe you'd want to pull up OkCupid to look at the relationship status of the person sitting next to you. You go to a business function, for example, and you can pull up LinkedIn with facial recognition to help you remember the names of people you should already know. So that's one of the reasons why we're just seeing, that's how I use LinkedIn. You know, we're seeing a lot of very heavy hitters, including Facebook and Microsoft and Amazon, getting into this augmented reality space. And I think it's really going to be a big, big thing.
I think your sharing of examples of usage allows the consumer to really connect. We're speaking with Jim Lee. He is the founder of Strategic Foresight Investors. We're talking tonight, the program, Racing with Technology, Technology of Things. This is Managing Change, and we'll be welcome back to Managing Change. I'm your host, Ronald Allen, and every Tuesday and Thursday evening, we bring you an eclectic perspective on all things about change. As you know, change starts with you, the individual. We call it the id, psychologist among us. Family dynamics, as we know, family certainly change, the meaning of certainly broaden, and we find whether it's a sorority, fraternity, or even your favorite sports team, that can certainly become a family. And talk about business and entrepreneurship. I'm always pleased to say, as an immigrant to the United States, this is still the country of opportunity because you can make it if you go the distance. Of course, you have to surround yourself with that is the challenge. In some cases, you feel that some people may be in your best interest. Well, they're just not, as they say, paying it forward. But tonight's guest, Jim Lee, he certainly is paying it forward because as a financial planner, chartered financial analyst, and no less than a chartered technician, studying markets, behavior, the economics of industries, he brings to us a very fresh perspective and a very human perspective on how technology will impact. We've been talking about a few items. I think this next one, flexible bioelectronics, definitely a winner. Jim, give us the lowdown on this particular market.
Sure. So right before the break, we were talking about wearables, 90% of which are wrist-based, although you know there seems to be a push towards augmented and virtual reality glasses as well. But one area that I've been tracking and have been really kind of fascinated with, because I think it's still very, very early in the game, but I think immensely beneficial is this whole area of flexible bioelectronics, as it were? And you can sort of think about smartphones and smart watches, and now you're actually getting into smart bandages, as it were. And we may start to see these hit the market within the course of the next 5 years or so. So some of these might be used to detect, for example, the early stage of wound infection. So my wife, Stephanie, she works at the hospital as an infectious disease doctor, and she works with a lot of people that have infections of various sorts. So instead of just protecting your wound from infection, it might be able to detect it as well, so that you can get early medical intervention if necessary. Now, the way that they do this is actually kind of ingenious, because there are two ways of detecting wound infection. There's one is actually to monitor the pH level of a cut or an injury, which actually becomes alkaline when it's infected. So pH levels, you have alkaline versus acidic. The meter moves towards alkaline. Possibility you're having some problems here. Another technology that's being used in this area uses artificial cells that are filled out with a type of ink that seeps out when the cell walls are weakened by bacterial toxins, right? So we have a few different companies in just this space right now, which suggests that something interesting could be happening here. You know, you're kind of getting people's attention right now.
I hope it's not going to put the dog sniffing or dog recognizing people are about to have strokes using dog training.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm out of work.
yeah, I've heard about that. Of, yeah.
In terms of detecting, what about delivery? See a potential use in delivering medication through this?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a huge potential there. And you just have to look back at the nicotine patches that came out, 10, 20 years ago as a way of helping people with smoking cessation. Some of the newer things that I'm seeing right now in terms of therapeutic bandages, one's a smart bandage that's embedded with microcell batteries, as it were, to stimulate cell generation with just a small amount of current, as it were, electrical current. This is done by a company called ProCellera. And what they've found is that by stimulating cuts, that they can accelerate healing by up to 45%, which is a really big deal. So they're looking at military applications for this technology is probably where it will be first to market.
That's interesting you mentioned that. I know going back 10 years longer, at the university in Boston, I believe there was a medical in L.A., it came out with capability of treating military personnel in the field while they were stateside.
Mm-hmm.
This robotic technology that could dispense liquids, could understand the depth, width, opening up skin, even suturing. So I
yeah.
guess all of this, this technology is just driving ability to deliver services, apply monitoring, just makes
mm-hmm.
our life, when we need it, that much more. Wireless
right.
and ambient power. I know in the lighting industry, it has gone full circle. Light has become a significant factor. And I was studying in college for the Hawthorne experiment with lighting. But this has gone a step
mm-hmm.
further. Lightness on
mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. Could you repeat that? I just lost you for a moment there.
Okay. I was saying, enlighten us in this
Oh,
area.
Okay, yes, yeah, because I can talk about the lighting industry as well. So I thought we're going in that direction. Yeah, so with wireless power, I mean, this kind of is just one of the pieces of the puzzle for flexible bioelectronics and other wearables, and that is if you have these devices, how are you going to be able to generate the power for them, right? Just because you don't necessarily want to be carrying around a large battery. And what they're finding out is that energy exists in just all kinds of interesting places. Okay, so my dad was a scientist, and back in the 1950s, he was putting together crystal radios. And you might be familiar with some of those. Basically, they would take a radio signal and they would convert it directly to sound or music without any other outside power sources to speak of. On some of these flexible bioelectronics, in many cases, they're able to scavenge the energy off of our bodies. I mean, our skin produces about 2 volts worth of electricity, which can be used for, you know, small appliances, very, very small appliances. And then that sort of leads us into this idea of wireless power, which is how can we all cut the cord, right? How can we cut the cord for our phones? We've done that by going onto cell phone. But how can we cut the cord now for our gadgets so that they're not necessarily as dependent upon batteries or cables or plug-ins? So right now I have a Sonos speaker system at my house, and I love it because it's wireless music. I didn't have to take out the plaster in my walls to put it in. But the next step, and this is just kind of hitting right now, is this whole idea of wireless power transmission. And this was actually a technology that they found, you know, 100 years ago by an inventor called Nikola Tesla. And it's just beginning to see commercial applications today. Actually, the first commercial application was in the wireless toothbrush. You know, we've sort of all seen those, the electric toothbrushes that brush your teeth, like Sonicare, for example, with sound and sort of a mechanical motion. A lot of cases, those are being used with touchless or near-cast type of power transfer, as it were, to charge their batteries. But two technologies here. One is called near-casting. The other one's called far-casting. Near-casting looks almost like a coffee coaster and just charges on contact. So there's a company here that I've been following, and, you know, disclosure, I have investments in, called Interbase IDTI, which is Device Technologies, Integrated Device Technologies. And they create these charging pads, which IKEA is now building into coffee tables and bedstands and so forth, so that when you go to bed at night, you don't have to fumble around in the dark for the power cord for your cell phone. You just put the thing on your table and it charges up, right? And Samsung's also using this now for its cell phones also. So that's something called near casting, which requires just sort of physical contact but no cable. Longer term, there's another technology out there, which is called far casting, where you're basically transmitting power at a distance with secure encryption. So you can think of it as Wi-Fi for electricity. And you know, the advantage here is that because it is password encrypted power, you won't necessarily have your next door neighbor surfing on your electric bill, right? So once you have the code, you put that in your device and you can charge it anywhere within your house. So Witricity is the company that's doing that, Witricity. It's still pre-public, so it's sort of hard for, you know, your everyday investor to get into. But I think that's a very interesting solution that everyone's running into right now on how do you keep your devices charged up, right?
When you mentioned power source, the cell, with the near and far casting, could you transfer solar energy into any that kind of container and then use it through the encryption device? That it, can it be can the energy be contained or created from solar energy and then in this way?
Yeah, it certainly could. And actually, that's one of the things that Tesla is working on. They have a really interesting strategy, and they have some solar exposure, but they've also been working on batteries. And what they're doing now is they're building batteries to help out their solar panels during their evening, basically. So you charge up their batteries during the day, and then you use that power at night after you store it. There is a bit of a disadvantage, though, with using far casting for wireless power transfer, and that is because the signal gets distributed very broadly. It's a 360-degree signal. So you lose a lot of efficiencies that you probably would want if you have a solar panel on your house, right? So, you know, you go through all this effort to generate that energy. You want to be able to keep it or conserve it. And for the time being, wireless power transfer is not the best choice for that.
I've also, I would go take a look. I want to also attach a question to this aspect, to this part of the discussion. They've been talking, and this is again for the last 10 years, battery cells that last the life or the expected lifespan of a cell phone, a computer. And of course, we recently, late last year, Tesla did come out with an electric car that can go some. Apologize, I don't have my numbers. It's
mm-hmm.
a good 100 miles on charge.
Yeah. They're getting 200 miles on those now. Mm-hmm.
Different type of technology, different structure of the Duracell, the Everlast, the Energizer Bunny. What is that technology? What technology are they using that's allowing me to buy a laptop and not have to plug it in at all? What is that?
Well, I think that you may have to plug it in at some point, but we are seeing a lot of research being done in the rechargeable battery space. And this is something that I've been following for a while. And it's been sort of slow to go mainstream or slow to go public just because of the chemistry involved. If you look at what Tesla is doing, for example, they're building a rechargeable battery mega plant out in the Southwest. And for the time being, to my awareness, they're still using lithium ion technology. So the same battery technology that's calculating your calculator would be running your car as well, right? And this is probably not the end solution. So Tesla's working on some other chemical variations, including lithium air, which I find interesting. Other companies are looking for things called solid-state batteries. The one that I'm probably the most enthused about right now is something called a supercapacitor. Okay, so when you change the components within the battery from graphite to something called graphene, which is a more anatomically correct form of graphite, you get a battery that can charge a car within minutes, as it were, and give you significant improvements in terms of mileage as well. So that's something that I get excited about, because the rap on cars has been, who wants to keep it plugged in for hours and hours? But when you move from battery to supercapacitor, you go down to minutes, basically, on your recharge. So that whole area of graphene, I think, has potential to be a huge opportunity.
Jim Lee, he is the founder of Strategic Foresight Investments, LLC, tonight on Managing Change. I am your host, Ronald Allen, and every Tuesday and Thursday evening, we bring you a truly eclectic perspective on our market, our life, our personalities, and all of the things that we look at as we go from child to adolescent to young adult, and even now, when you think of old, consider this. The average age in assisted living is 82. So when you retire at 65, or those of us who are fortunate enough to retire in their late 50s, you have almost 30 years still to live. Well, the question begs itself, what are you going to engage yourself in to stimulate your mind, to keep you thinking and being active? I've seen so many people who have retired in their late 50s, 60s, and certainly their 70s, almost grind into the dirt because they're bored. Their mind still needs to be active. The question is, does your brain know how old it is? Well, I know mine doesn't. You're listening to Managing Change on Blog Talk Radio. Our guest tonight, Jim Lee. We're talking about the technology of things. We are going to be right back.
Why do I listen to Managing Change with Ronald Allen and guests on blogtalkradio.com? Because I get to hear somebody else tell their story that relates to me. Issues, changes, and accomplishments that affect my life. Whether you're experiencing a career change, going through a family discussion about change, or an entrepreneur navigating the changes in your industry, Ronald's guests share their stories about winning. They bring solutions to bear on your issues. They get me answers to today's challenges in life. That's why I listen. Blogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change in Managing Life's Changes.
Think about managing change. You also say to yourself, well, what is this guy doing? This guy that's on the radio now, we've had over 148 episodes, bringing you various guests talking about their world, their industry, their passion. That's what really comes through. The knowledge is absolutely superb. And at the same time, you learn that your passion is what drives you. Well, we are coming out at the end of this month with our own online workbook. Working title? Your mind for success. And it's going to be an exercise, experiential as usual, where you will be able to do a series of questions about you. That's the difference. Many programs tell you what you should do based on their observations, their studies. One question I've had from many people is, well, what if it doesn't work for me? So the part of the equation, algorithm if you will, is how do you make the program bring the person's experience to that environment and let them test the validity and let them seek out the resources they need to apply to their life. As we've spoken in the past, it's the litmus test of life. How is life treating you based on your perception? Therefore, how can you adjust, engage, bring the right resources that will get your situation, your needs resolved? Well, tonight's resolve for me, certainly, is by way of Jim Lee. We're talking about racing with technology, the technology of things. And we've spoken about a number of areas that are very much everyday, and yet the technology is perhaps known only by a few. So let's continue. And we're going to kind of dig into an area that I am totally lost. So I'm going to definitely invite Jim to tell us. Because when I talk about smart dust, there was a gentleman I read many years ago, I think his last name is Donaldson, that spoke about energy in matter. And the point that I'm making here is, if you look at a physical object, you think it's a solid. But if you look at the anatomy, hoping we're using the right terminology, if you look at the anatomy, it's actually made up of these molecules moving around incredibly fast, which make it seem that it's a solid, which, of course, is directly opposite of the way that we think of physical and fluid matter. So I'm going to leave it at that, and I'm going to let Jim Lee tell us, what is smart dust?
Sure. Well, smart dust, what it is they are almost a powder. It's like a sugar cube, as it were, of something called a radio frequency identification chip. And it tells you two things. It tells you where it is and what it's doing, okay? So we talked about the Internet of Things, which is about connecting the physical world to the digital world. and that's happening through wearable electronics. That's happening to smart devices, including smart cars and smart appliances. But then there's the question of how do you connect the natural world to the digital world? And that's really where smart dust comes in. So what the military has been doing is they have been putting together what are called mesh networks of these, you could call them grains of sugar or smart dust, as it were, and applying them to a physical area to measure things such as light, temperature, moisture, movement, and also vibration. Okay, so you can think of it as the quantified self for things like fields or roads or mines, for example. So with smart dust, you can gather information on the world about you. So this is right now being used primarily in mining operations where it's very difficult to get a good Wi-Fi signal, for example. We're beginning to see grape growers and wineries integrate smart dust to track the health of their vines, for example, to see if they need to be watered, see if the temperature is right, and so forth. And once you set these networks up, they will give you just a whole lot of information. And two companies that are working hard on this, one's Hitachi, the other one's called Linear Technology.
That is quite interesting. What I liked explanation, many people might feel, okay, it's high technology, you mentioned government, you mentioned military, they have the means. And then you said the wine industry. And in New Jersey, approximately 32, if not more, wineries. And of course, because of the changing, fluctuating temperatures we've experienced over the last 5 years,
right.
Year or two, technology that perhaps as a cooperative, they could come together and use it to save what they invested in. So right there, guys, this is what we talk about when we talk about change. And kind of my responsibility to listen in. Again, this smart dust, I try to study a little bit about it, but I'd rather let Jim explain, and I see immediately its application. Well, let's move on to another area, which I think, again, one that I definitely want to touch on. And I definitely want Jim to tell us about his chartered marketing technical prowess, because I think, again, having this high level show us how we, maybe, how these things affect us is really the change and the difference. Instead of always having our head in the sand, thinking that we have to dig away at a particular challenge, there are solutions. You have to find the people who think differently or have a different perspective. That's really what I'm enjoying about this tonight's conversation. So virtual reality gets real. I know we spoke about the blog. I know some of the youngsters have these stereoscopic viewing devices. I was on a project last year, and one of the attendees, he brought the air where in and had to use an Android. Fortunately, at the time, Apple's phone did not integrate with this.
Not yet. Coming soon. Yeah, so this is the year that that virtual reality gets real. And that was my own favorite Christmas present from last year. It's called the Samsung Gear VR. And it is a headset. It's a pair of goggles into which you can snap your cell phone, and it splits your cell phone screen and magnifies it into two different screens so that you have a full stereoscopic effect. Now, with your cell phones, as you know, when you change direction or you change the angle of it, there are gyroscopes inside that cell phone to tell you how you're moving. It tells you about changes in position, as it were. So lots of advertising I saw in the Academy Awards, you know, last week for the Gear VR. And you're going to see more different types of headsets come out for the PlayStation and also for the Microsoft Xbox. Facebook made a $2 billion investment in a virtual reality company called Oculus Rift. 2 years ago, everyone thought that they were crazy, but now it looks genius, okay? And when I first started experimenting with virtual reality, I thought, you know, this would just be a great way to play some games or maybe watch some movies. And I've found that, for me, the killer app here is travel and just going to see places that I would never be able to go to, like Cuba or North Korea or Aleppo in Syria, for example. And you literally get dropped into these immersive environments, and you can gaze at the chandelier, you can look at people's shoes, you can turn around, and you feel like you are in a very different place. And the applications for this are huge. One of the early adopters, I was kind of surprised to hear, were colleges and universities that are now using virtual reality platforms for college tours. So instead of throwing your kids in the car and going up and down the East Coast on a road trip, you can save yourself a trip, put on your VR headset, and take a look at the campus. And I just think that's ingenious.
Great opportunity. Save some money. Absolutely. Speak volumes. We're talking with Jim Lee this evening. He is the founder, CEO of Strategic Foresight Investments. We're talking about, of course, the technology of things. Jim is a certified financial planner, chartered financial analyst, and his area is technology. Moreover, how does the application of this technology impact our lives, and what could be the potential for the investor who wants to put it? How realistic? We're going to be right back. We've got two more items we definitely have to touch base on. We're listening to Managing Welcome back to Managing Change. I'm host Ron Allen, and every Tuesday and Thursday evening, we bring you an eclectic perspective on all things about change. As you know, we're going through our presidential elections right now. That's going to be a significant change as we select a new CEO for our country. The women's movement on a global level, many of you may not realize, but it is quite actually intensifying. We've got many groups merging together, almost like a cooperative, seeking equality, which is kind of strange when you think of the Myers Briggs personality profile methodology. This was a mother-daughter who came up with this set of tools, which is obviously now applied to our corporations, at a time when women were not considered viable entities in our society. So when you think of the challenges you're going through, changes that you have to endure, look back at your own culture, your own nationality, and seek out those who had, if not similar, certainly more severe challenges. It wasn't the ability to galvanize support, which we can do now across the world, where there wasn't an ability to cry out and say, hey guys, this is not right. or rather, to the true capitalist, economically, we're losing an opportunity. So when you speak in those terms, you tend to pull people together as opposed to creating silos for your own interests. And certainly our interests tonight are being served by our guest, Jim Lee, who's the founder of Foresight Investments, and he's been sharing with us technology that we can not only invest in, we can use it, apply it, and if you have the mind for it, you can jump right in and find additional developments, applications for its use. And we've been talking about a number of really cool technologies. Jim, I want to talk about wearable robotics for the simple reason I was going through school at our college. There was a young man, Philip Moore, who was struck with polio at the age of about 4 or 5. And he wore these very uncomfortable calipers. Well, today's wearable robotics give a totally different meaning and ability to be ambulatory. And its application is far exceeds one's possible basic understanding. So some of its application, where is it going?
Sure. So there's a lot going on in the wearable robotics space. Sometimes they're called exoskeletons. Two of the early applications, one has been for rehabilitation therapies, and the other has been, you know, primarily military types of use. Within the rehabilitation space, what they're doing is they're developing exoskeletons that have battery-powered joints, as it were, that can help people like your friend get up and walk, basically, so that they are no longer confined to a wheelchair. They have mobility and the ability to move, you know, just all day long. So those two companies, one's called ExoBionics, the other one is called ReWalk. They're competing in this space. And anytime I see a number of companies occupying the same space, it suggests that this is a technology that people are beginning to take seriously. Okay. So I find that really interesting, very encouraging, particularly with the baby boomers. You're seeing the front edge of the baby boomer generation turn 70 right now. And if you look at the demographics, they're going to be getting a lot of hip replacements. They're going to need to put a little bit more spring in their step at some point. So this is definitely a growing industry, as it were.
I'm thinking deep sea, is it capable of that with the certain limitations?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that again, please?
I was thinking deep sea salvage rescue. Is there applications in that area for this type of technology?
Yeah, there could be, to the extent that some of the more military-oriented applications give you super strength and the ability to lift things and move things that you just couldn't do before. So DARPA's been working on this really since about 2000. Through something called the Human Performance Augmentation Program. And they've developed these exoskeletons through Raytheon and also through Lockheed Martin, which are, you know, your basic military contractors. And what people are able to do with these wearable exoskeletons is they're able to carry up to 20 times more weight than they would normally be able to carry. So it's, to a certain degree, giving them a type of superpower almost. Now, these are just skeletons right now. They're not encased. That's really sort of the next step, which will probably happen by 2020 or so. And then you would also need to waterproof that if you're looking for deep sea recovery types of applications. So I'd say that's going to be a little bit further out still. But it all kind of makes sense down the road.
Another area, Jim, that I'm very interested in, empathetic internet.
Right.
I'm thinking, and correct me, for example, Samsung, even though you're giving it instructions to to go from station to station or roll through a series of menus or lists. It's also taking feedback and then subscribing information or pathway. How does this application?
Yeah, well, I think one of the early outcomes of this is, even though, you know, we've moved past broadcast television, we've moved past cable television, we're kind of moving into the golden age of television, as it were, with Netflix and Amazon gathering data, for example, about our viewing habits, okay? They know, for example, that people like to binge watch TV. They know what plot lines are attractive to people. They know what characters are attractive to people as well. Some of the movie theaters now, when they show you these teaser clips for a minute or two about a movie that's coming out, they actually use some types of analysis there where they will quantify your emotions, your responses to a movie clip based on your facial data, so that they can figure out exactly which snippets to put in the advertisement, for example. So while the early uses for that are primarily in marketing, you could also imagine effective computing or the ability to read the emotions of the user to be applied in areas such as education, where you can combine that with a platform, a learning platform, and your computerized tutor can tell whether you're engaged or whether you're bored or just simply confused, right?
So we're talking psychology, behavioral studies, coded through analytics, when they're observing, listening, the screen is now monitoring you.
That's right. It's a two-way level of communication, and earlier they were just trying to figure out what you're saying, right, in text-to-speech or speech-to-text. Now they're trying to figure out what you actually mean, right? And that's a whole nother layer of analytics that are being brought into play now.
Doesn't that then skirt on the legal rights of monitoring? The definition of privacy has now been extended or changing. The definition of privacy has to change, because if you're monitoring and then you're feeding back information which is psychologically and behaviorally stimulating, it's almost like trailers on caffeine. You know?
Right.
They'll keep you going.
Right.
Really becoming, because I know, I think it was Toshiba or Samsung. Samsung was taken to task international rights. There's a legal board that said you can't monitor people, take what they're saying, what they like, what they dislike, sell it to a third party, and that third party drips content to that individual over there. Cell phones, what have you.
Oh, yes.
So now our meaning of privacy, it has to change. Or has to.
I don't think we're all able to keep up with it. I mean, if you have a Facebook account, and if you've ever dived into the privacy settings of Facebook, in terms of permission to use cookies, permission to access your friends' network, permission to view your browsing activity after you get out of Facebook, for example. I think there's a serious risk of people getting lost in the permissions when they don't know how much information they're giving out, and they don't necessarily have the ability to put a value on that information like the companies that they're competing with do.
I have to bring up a book that you Future of Business, Rohit Taylor. You wrote a chapter for that book?
Yeah, that was an amazing book, and it just came out last summer. The whole thing was put together in 3 months, which is stunning, you know, in the publishing world. And Rohit's one of the, I think, better recognized futurists coming out of England. He's in London. And what he did is he reached out to 60 different futurists in 20 different countries to put together essays and chapters on the future of everything. So I have a chapter there on the future of energy. There's quite a bit there on artificial reality, transhumanism, a lot of people talking about the Bitcoin, for example, and the future of business and, you know, and these kinds of things. So it's a heavy read, but it really went straight to the top of my go-to list of people, interesting things for people who want to stay current.
Jim, as we wrap up our program tonight, and I really appreciate you taking this time out, what can you share with us for the business owner and then the investor? Because you know, big.com bubble, real estate has always had a bubble, so we're not even going to worry about real estate.
Right.
Even wrote about that, so that's not anything new. But for the business owner who is running their business and obviously will be impacted by all of this technology and certain some part of it, and then could you share us your view, because I guess I want to get your chartered marketing technician side presented a little bit here. Tell us about what an investor should be looking for.
Yeah, well, from an investment perspective, there are three questions that every investor needs to ask. And the same could be true for a business as well. So one question is where? You know, where do you find the big opportunities for the course of the next 5 to 10 to 20 years? Okay. The next question is, what do you do and what do you buy? And that really starts looking at the financials and at the business end of things. The third question is, when do you do it? And that's all about the technical analysis. That's all about looking at the cycles and looking at investor sentiment so that you can fine-tune your entry points and your exit points. So that will be the topic of my upcoming book on foresight investing, which is how do you answer the where, what, and when questions of investing using the disciplines of strategic foresight, fundamental analysis, and also technical analysis.
I like the way you branded the company name with the very act of strategic foresight. Jim Lee, he is the founder of Strategic Foresight Investment. He is our guest, has been our guest tonight, Racing with Technology. Jim, thank you very much, and I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen, on Internet Blog Talk Radio with guests providing their perspectives about you, the individual, the family nucleus, your career, your business, and your entrepreneurial spirit, life's perspectives about managing change. Join Ronald and guests every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. for another episode about managing change on InternetBlogTalkRadio.com. Remember, the program is now showcased on managingchange2.com, where you can search for your favorite guest interview or get in touch with them and start a chat, enter their forum, or start your own public or private group to engage others in managing change. Catch Managing Change Internet Blog Talk Radio.com. Search Managing Change every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Be seeing you.